Hi everyone, I'm Haresh Kupchandani, Vice President at Autodesk Asia Pacific. Welcome to Impact Matters, a thought leadership series that brings together thought leaders from across the globe and Asia to discuss a variety of different conversations and issues on how we can reimagine our future together. This is an important journey for Autodesk as a company as we continue to empower creators and innovators around the world to make the world a better place and create the next possible. So today's conversation will focus on, you know, things related to sustainability, ESG. Climate change has been something that's been widely discussed recently as well. And climate change and the journey towards addressing the issues relating to climate change is one that requires support and involvement from civil society, from private organizations, and from governments. All of us need to come together through this journey so that we can build back better and we can build back greener. Now, we will be discussing what are some of the issues that are stopping businesses necessarily from adopting ESG practices. Investors are now looking at how they can allocate their funds towards businesses that practice ESG or have ESG as a core part of their strategies. Consumers are demanding a lot more eco-friendly and green products. Governments now are looking to turn around and reduce carbon emissions so that they can save energy and they can have lesser greenhouse impact on the planet today as well. More and more, ESG is front and center of how organizations can help build back better, help build back stronger, and help build back greener. Today, I get to welcome an industry expert, someone who I've known for a while, and someone who has been in Autodesk, leading Autodesk global sustainability efforts historically. Today, he is an advisor to many organizations in helping them understand what exactly is ESG, the role they can play, and how it can be a core part of corporate strategy, ensuring companies not just think about making profits, but make profits while at the same time doing right and good for the planet. So Jake, welcome.
Thank you, Haresh. It's appreciate the invitation and it's great to be here. As you mentioned, that's what I do today. I'm a consultant and advisor to companies, specifically looking at sustainability and how to make that a value driver. My background is in product design. I started in consumer electronics, and right early on at the beginning of my career, I was always wondering what happens to all that work, blood, sweat, and tears that you put into making a product that ends up on the shelf in the store, but a year later it gets replaced with the next version. So there is a lot that goes into making a product that actually didn't survive very long. And when I joined Autodesk, actually through another software company, I had a couple of different stops and made my journey into sustainability. And today, this is what I'm feeding on, this journey of having seen customers in the manufacturing space, in the built environment space. And for sure, in the last couple of months, I would say in sort of a post-COVID world, ESG and sustainability generally has been on the top of many executives in this region and everywhere else.
You know, it's really, really nice to have you here. You know, I've known you for a couple of years now, and you know, in the time when you were in Autodesk and you and I interacted, I learned, you know, so much with regards to what this whole sustainability ESG thing is about. It was very new to me, and I actually think it's very new to a lot of people, right? Yeah. Everyone's talking about ESG. Larry Fink, the BlackRock CEO, talked about it in his annual letter for the first time, I think maybe a year or two ago. Yeah. And now ESG is at the front and center of how, you know, capital allocation is happening for investors as well, right?
Yes.
So the pressure is on. But in your experience, given the experience you have, not just during the time when you were in Autodesk, but even when you're right in the heart of advising companies, do organizations and the greater private organization sector and governments actually understand what ESG is?
Increasingly so. I mean, ESG, right, this acronym that stands for the environmental, social, and governance performance measures of a company, actually dates back to 2004. In 2004, Kofi Annan started an initiative that had this purpose of taking these factors and integrating them into the capital markets. So in 2005, he invited 12 investor groups to start working out principles for responsible investment. And that's what they became, the United Nations Principle of Responsible Investments in 2006. You know, and then you fast forward the Paris Climate Agreement at COP21. There, the first time, I would say, the first time private sector really started to warming up towards aligning themselves towards the Sustainable Development Goals. And today, I was just reading in the last year, the Fortune 500 in the US added, 30% added a chief sustainability officer. So there is a really big increase. In Asia Pacific, there has been a little bit of a lackluster sort of adoption there. In July, I think it was the head of the Singapore Stock Exchange actually said that 70% of the ESG, of the inflows into ESG funds happened in Asia in 2020. So there's suddenly a very big uptake there. And the market worldwide, so ESG themed assets under management is projected to be 1/3 of global assets by 2025 or more even. So for sure, investors are looking into it. Governments have started to look into it. You know, there is a Singapore Green Plan, for example, in Singapore, and many other stock exchanges, 40 stock exchanges worldwide, have an ESG guidance or requirement. Mm. And private sector, because of that, are starting to look into it as well.
So it's pretty amazing. You've been to COP21. So yes, yeah. You've been right in the heart where, you know, a lot of these conversations have started happening. And, you know, if I heard you correctly, you said all of this started in 2004, right? Visibility, you know, setting up principles and what we need to turn around and do. The kind of roadmap of sorts started from 2004.
Yeah.
Whilst we've made progress, why hasn't this been an imperative that got embraced much earlier by organizations and governments and society in general?
Yeah, so that's a good question, right? I mean, if you look at, just recently, a German received a Nobel Prize for physics, sharing it with two other researchers. And he was instrumental in sort of laying this out, how humans are responsible for climate change and for the challenges that we face today. It just takes a long time. I think there's sort of parts human nature and resistance to change. But the reasons today are, I would say, more than urgent. I see three main reasons. There are a couple of reasons more why it is so important. And one for sure is investor pressure. That is sort of something that has come up increasingly. And it's not just, sort of me saying that. The Financial Times had articles talking about it just a little while ago. Baker McKenzie, that law firm, said that in Asia Pacific over the last 3 years, the pressure that asset managers put onto companies has risen 30%. And, it hasn't happened to me before, but just in the last 6 months, I had calls from companies who were saying, hey, our investors tell us we got to increase our ESG score. How are we going to do that? I already have enough on my plate. And now I have to be afraid that the investor may take his money and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so that becomes a real issue on why companies now starting to do it. Why does it take so long? Yeah, it's maybe we need the 5 minutes to midnight sort of last minute push for us to start moving. And hopefully COP26 really brings that push forward for companies.
And I honestly hope so too. I mean, we as a company, Autodesk as a company, has been on this journey for a while, and you know this, from the time you were here, over a decade now. And, we just announced we hit net zero, which is fantastic, right?
Yes,
at least I work for a company that is, paying attention to some of these issues, right?
Yeah.
And actually investing quite a fair bit. And we'll probably talk about it, in terms of the role of a technology company, for example, in today's world, in how they help address and how they help partner to resolve some of these issues. But bringing it back to Asia Pacific, and you talked about APAC, right? Whilst there's progress, the progress is not fast enough. Do you see in your experiences with organizations reacting to ESG because there is a real belief that ESG can actually not only impact and solve issues regarding to climate change, but also impact their business. Versus it's a tick in the box. I have pressure from my investor relations. I got to do something. I got to put in my annual report so it looks good. What are you observing out there?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. I mentioned the investor pressure. The second thing is companies actually do realize that there is new business values to be created. There's an opportunity for new products, for new services. There's an opportunity for top line growth. So now you mentioned, you know, Autodesk reaching net zero, which is fantastic. And that is something that's being picked up too. So as an example, that actually could have cost implications too, as in reducing cost. Mahindra Group is a good example. Massive sized organization, 150 companies. They have a 2040 net zero goal. So if you look at a company like this, that they make so many, things including cars, they need just a lot of time to get there. It's just a massive undertaking, but they do this mainly through renewable energy sourcing, energy management, energy efficiencies, electrification of their fleets and the products that they sell. And by doing so, they actually achieve cost reductions. So there is that as well, right? So there is a little bit of, it's not just because the investors tell us we got to do something. There is also sort of an awakening towards that's an opportunity to build new markets and maybe new products.
It's a great point, right? I remember the work that we're doing globally with many of our customers as well. One that is notable is the work we're doing with Airbus, as an example, where we're helping them. You know, when you think about travel, you know, that's a big contributor to pollution, right? And gas emissions and so on. So we're actually helping them now using technologies that, you know, take advantage of AI and machine learning, what we call generative design, for example, to design lighter parts. And we help them in the process so that they can make lighter planes.
Yeah.
And lighter parts, lighter planes means lower fuel consumption, which means less impact in terms of carbon emissions out into the atmosphere. And just that one partition that we got redesigned, you know, allowed them to save about 3,180 kilograms of fuel consumption a year per partition.
Yeah.
That is super powerful when you start to think about, you know, multiplying that by the number of parts, the number of travel, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So incredibly, you know, incredible stories from around the globe, from Airbus to Mahindra, and to then other companies like Titan, you know, who make watches and jewelry and design, who are building it in a more sustainable fashion at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, these stories are many, but they're not enough to accelerate. What makes it different for organizations that are accelerating the adoption of ESG within their organizations? What can we learn from them, and how can, you know, we help others learn from these best practices?
Yeah, so, you know, these stories are great, right? It's good and inspirational. The challenge, I think, is often that SMEs look at, you know, Airbus or Mahindra and say, sure, they can do this. They have the big budgets, but I'm, you know, I have 200 people.
Fair point.
How do I get to do that? How do we future-proof ourselves? How do we make this happen? And you know, companies that approach consultants who would say, well, how do we do this? Is there somewhere an opportunity? And like I would come in and we do an exercise and we try to identify where are these opportunities? Where are these golden nuggets? Because they do exist. And whether it's changing your business model or maybe taking something that was considered waste and use it for something else. There's a good story. Southwest Airlines changed 80,000 seats, the covers, from leather to lighter materials because they wanted to reduce the weight, just like Airbus.
There you go.
But now they have 80,000 old leather seats, the covers. And so what did they do? They could have put this into a trash. And so they found an opportunity to make, through another business, bags from these leather covers. So there was an example of upcycling, right? And by doing so, you conserve thousands of liters of water intake needed per kilogram of leather. So it's a really good example. So it's not waste. I think that's sort of the other thing that we have to think about. Waste is not, is we only call it waste because we no longer see a value. But it's actually not waste, right? The material is still there. There is maybe other things that people can do. So it requires a little bit of a small shift in thinking and widening of your thinking and see where are things that you can leverage within your company that you haven't thought about earlier.
I really love how you frame this, right? Mm. And you used a word that was interesting, future-proof. Mm. You said future-proof. For me, future-proofing is like an oxymoron, right? That term in itself, right? Mm. But when you think about future-proofing, you also can also, you know, in my mindset, mm. it's also about how you build resilience,
yeah,
right? Yes. And some of the things you talked about allows us to build resilience in our organization. You talked about mindset, you know, having a different mindset to think about what can I do differently to save fuel, lower consumption? How can I think differently to reduce costs, yeah. for example? And ESG allows us to start or forces us to start thinking of newer ways to do the same thing or something better mm. at a much lesser cost with a much higher and more friendly and less impactful impact onto the environment, for example, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So mindset shift seems to be a big piece here. Mm. The other big piece here is obviously education, and that's what part of the series is, right?
Yes.
For Impact Matters, to yeah. educate everyone. The next piece seems to be the use of technology.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Because it starts with the design phase, right? Mm. Brian Collins once said, a design is, you know, hope made visible, mm. right? So if you have hope for the future and you want to design that future, it starts, you know, with design, and it starts with using the right technology, in the technology that harnesses data, mm. right, to be able to turn around and make smarter decisions. What do you think is the role of technology, in your opinion? I'm biased, I work for a technology company,
yeah.
but what do you think is the role of technology in this whole phase of driving ESG adoption, mm. Not just adoption, but making it a core part of how companies inculcated as a core part of their strategic pillars?
So technology has a role as a tool in a number of different ways. So you mentioned data. A company, I mean, today it is much easier for a large company or even for smaller companies that have large databases to use this data and maybe have an algorithm to identify patterns. And so you could, you know, in the case of Autodesk, it's how it's the design tools that you use to make better buildings in the computer before you start building them in real space, or whether it's a car or any other sort of product. And then, of course, you have the reporting tools. So that is something that has changed and is changing. Right? There are efforts for a standardization of ESG scoring and how you measure this. And the digitization of processes supports all that. The fact that you have a mobile phone or a mobile device that can collect data all the time, or preventive maintenance for machinery, industrial machinery. So people putting sensors on machines through AI, understanding that there is a slight difference in vibration, and that may mean somewhere here is a mechanical part that may fail. And so somebody is looking at this through a device, and now I actually have an opportunity to identify a potential problem that does not stop the entire line, but gives me an hour to quickly replace a part, and I can keep everything else running. So there is technology, certainly, that helps us preemptively preventing, mm. Monitoring, identifying patterns, planning, and analyzing. And so there's so many things that's possible. Retrofitting buildings, I think that's another opportunity there.
Yeah.
And I think you mentioned education. That is actually another core reason of why companies should get into this, is because talent. Mm. You could lose talent or you can gain talent based on your sustainability strategy. So and that's real. You can read this up in the news, how millennials are looking forwards to work for a company that stands for something, that gives them meaning as an employee. I spoke to a corporate trainer here in Singapore, and so she's advising CEOs and executives, and she told me that they have a problem. During COVID, people would leave the company and join a smaller company because they had a really well-declared purpose of what they're going to do and how they're using technology or products or services along a very strong sustainability line. And so companies that have a strong sustainability strategy or an ESG strategy, they have less turnover of employees. They attract talent. Well, that's a big deal too.
Jake, you made an interesting point on talent. I want to pick up on that, but I want to kind of make it a bit of a broader piece, because I think the talent crunch across all industries and all aspects of business, I think we're all facing it, right? Businesses globally. When you think about ESG and adoption of ESG, what do you think is holding back organizations from adopting ESG practices?
The main thing is the perception that it is a very complicated issue. It's a very complex thing to do and resolve, that it requires a lot of budget and funds. And of course, right, this is a little bit of an investment. And I can sympathize that a little bit with that. You know, when you look at 17 SDGs, there are 163 targets and 200 and something indicators. And of course, that's not, you know, no company is looking at all of this. So it just needs a little bit of a shift, that there is real opportunity. I mentioned, you know, three major reasons that I see, and talent being one of them. If you look at the other two, they're actually really also very beneficial. New opportunities, investor support, and so on. And I think that requires just a little bit of an extra nudge, I believe, for companies to really wake up to this and see it as a necessity. This is urgent. This is all determining how we are going to live our lives. So it's not an if, it's really just when, and the sooner the better.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think it is an imperative right now for organizations to actually start to take this a lot more seriously and make it a core part of, you know, how they do it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think one of the things I've realized is, you know, having spoken to a lot of customers and learning through the process over the last couple of years, is, you know, what steps should people take? And I'm sure in your role and in your advisory role that you're playing, you're actually helping companies build blueprints and understand the necessary steps they need to take in order to implement some of these practices. What would that look like?
So there are three main steps. Number one is purpose. And that really sort of goes towards the essence of your company. Why does the company exist? Why do you exist? What are you for? Are you just outputting products, or are you looking to actually create some real value for customers, for your customers or the consumers? And so, out of my personal experience, sitting at a dinner table, for anybody who has teenage kids, they tell me, my teenage sons tell me what's wrong with this world. And it's not just COVID, it's really just social injustices that they pick up. And climate change, so it's top of the line of their concern, and then it's a sort of, if you can put yourself into that shoes, and now you're a father of kids, and there are many, out of my personal experience, I've seen dads who've said, okay, I'm gonna go and change my job, or I'm going to start a new initiative, and then there is a different connection suddenly that they have with their children. But more importantly is that the decisions that you make does have an impact, right? And the ESG investors are increasingly looking at, do your activities, your strategies, do they align with that purpose? So that's important. Number two is stakeholders and materiality. When you're clear on a corporate purpose, that means also you're clear on understanding what outcome you want to deliver to all your stakeholders. who are your stakeholders? It's not just the shareholders. It's your employees, people that look up to you, business partners, NGOs that maybe represent the biodiversity, the nature's interests, governments. Well, also back home, family, wife, husbands. These are stakeholders. And so now the question is, what is important for them? So what you do is you do a matrix. And so that's what I usually run people through to find opportunities. On the y-axis, you have, you rank what's most important to your stakeholders. And then on the x-axis, you rank what's most important for your business, what's most material for your business. And then you go and find in this upper quadrant the top 20% of activities that relate to environmental, social, and governance that is important for your stakeholders and important and material for your business. And that's what you're focusing on. And so once you have that, and step three, you build out the right strategies and you measure your success. And so this is sort of the thing. You go, once you have a purpose and you align the strategies behind that, you can make investment decisions much better. McKinsey has shown in one report that companies with a strong ESG philosophy and strategy actually look at investments not just from a financial payoff, but also what is potentially ESG risky, right? Mm. And I'm not just talking environmental, also the social and the governance related issues. And so they become much better in long-term capital allocation for investments. And that's sort of the main key three steps. You leverage, at the end, you leverage your company's expertise and your skills and the resources, and you build a business case, and it gives you the opportunity to turn that into new business or new value for your companies and your customers.
You know, you framed it nicely, and it looks like, you know, when we think about ESG, it is more than just things like climate change. It's more than just saving energy. You know, it's more than just lowering costs. It's about, you know, the broader aspects of ESG that encompasses, you know, the UN Sustainability Development Goals, right?
Yeah.
You know, things like health and resilience, work and prosperity, for example. These are things that are important as well. And when we focus on that, we actually create cultures and environments and organizations that can become more resilient, highly motivated and engaged. And that can be a competitive advantage for organizations as well, in more ways than one, not just in terms of reducing costs. So there's a lot of tangible benefits that will come in the process. You know, I've often believed that if you want to reimagine the future, the first step is to understand the physics of the future. You know, and if we think about, you know, the physics of the future and how the world's changing, this, like what you have articulated, is going to become an imperative. You know, I reckon at one point it's not going to be about ESG investors, it's just going to be investors.
That's right.
Investors who are going to be concerned about your ESG strategy within your organizations. It's no longer going to be investors or ESG investors. It's going to be just investors. So I think that dynamic is clearly going to change, and the time to act is actually right now. We did a survey recently in ASEAN with Frost and Sullivan. Sorry, not in ASEAN, in Asia Pacific with Frost and Sullivan. It was interesting. Whilst there was progress, there was still a lot of work for us to do across the APAC regions. And in the survey, it was interesting to see that in ANZ, China, and ASEAN, 10% of the companies there actually had ESG as a core part of their strategic pillars. Only 10, about 10, 11%. We're really ranging, you know, it differs a little bit, but it ranges in that zone. And then I think you've got a big chunk in these regions, these three regions, at 40, 50%. They understand, and I think they need to translate that understanding into action.
Yeah.
Right? If you... We're talking to a series of CEOs now on Impact Matters right across ASEAN. And you realize, you know the stat, and you know there's a ton of work still to do. What is the one thing you would tell the CEOs today to get them going from understanding to action?
So it requires a trigger moment, right? And often trigger moments are emotionally rooted very often, right? I think we start being motivated by something. And so when you go back to our children, the out of my experience, when people, when executives are interested in doing something about this, it is about building a legacy, often. It is about that. But even if you're not in a position where you, you know, lead an organization with thousands of people, there is still an opportunity there. You know, what COVID has shown, what now that we are in sort of a little bit more normalized, or a new normal, I should say, right? We're still dealing with this. But one thing that has it, that COVID has shown to us is that the decisions that you make at home and the workplace and the community, these have implications beyond the family and the workplace and the community. And I think that is going to be important for business leaders to understand, is that the decisions that we make today is going to be a decision that the children will, our next generation will either look up to us or look down on us, right? Because it will influence way after we're all gone, right? And so I think could be a really strong motivator for somebody to say, okay, I get it. You know, maybe I'm, you know, somebody to say, I'll prepare it so that the next generation can take over, and they don't have to be angry about me that I left it in a mess for them to clean up. So I think that would be, the way I see it, that's often a really strong motivator from an emotional point of view.
I think you said it really well. You know, our legacy is, I think, what we all think about.
Yeah.
Sometimes we think about it later in our careers, not early in our careers,
yeah,
because we're too busy trying to build our careers. But I think when you think about legacy, I think that's a really good way to turn around and think about what you leave behind,
yes,
you know, and the impact it will have, whether it's on your friends, your family, your kids, and, you know, future generations. So I think that's well said. Mm-hmm. Jake, before you go, before, yeah, I let you go, I just want to say thank you. And I want to ask you one last question.
Sure.
What would your advice be to the audience today in their capacity as executives, as fathers, mothers, and as human beings? Mm. What would your advice to them be on ESG and what they can do to help contribute to the adoption of ESG practices, broadly speaking?
So every small action actually counts. So my advice would be, within your environment, within your group and circle of colleagues, whether regardless of which position you are in or whether it's within family, there are things that can be done. And you can see this when people spontaneously organize themselves within a condo, for example, and deciding now we are going to collect batteries collectively. So there's many things that actually can be done. My advice would be, if you're really serious about this, start with deciding why you want to do it. What drives you? What is the purpose? And that could be, there can be many things, but that needs to be translated into something that can be taken over by somebody else. Because if you have a purpose and don't do anything about it, then first of all, it's not a strong enough purpose, it doesn't drive you, and secondly, it's basically without value. So if you are a company leader, you look at your corporate purpose. If you are a head of a department, there are opportunities there too, on leveraging the expertise of your teams. And if you are just a consultant, you help others, like I try to do, in accomplishing and finding these opportunities, the golden nuggets, where the opportunities are, where you actually provide real value environmentally, socially, as well as financially. So that would be my advice.
Jake, very good advice. Start with why. Very,
yes,
important.
Start with why. Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us and being with us today on Impact Matters.
Thank you, Harsh. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on today's episode of Impact Matters. ESG, the topic we discussed today, is a journey. It's a journey that will require governments, private organizations, and civil society to come together to be able to make that difference. It is going to be a long-term journey that requires commitment, focus, and deliberate trade-offs across all parts of society. So to that end, we've just announced that we will be issuing the very first sustainability bond of a total of $1 billion to further align Autodesk's impact strategy with our financial strategy. This sustainability bond enables our investors to join us in our efforts to address important issues in alignment with key environmental, social, and governance indicators and the internationally recognized UN Sustainability Development Goals. It's a unique offering, it's one of a kind, and it's our commitment to continue on this journey and bring others along the road with us so that collectively we can make an impact, a positive impact on planet Earth. Thank you very much.